From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. The Trump administration is threatening to cut off U.S. funding to countries that oppose its decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley scolded the world body for voting Thursday to call the recognition null and void.
The United States will remember this day in which it was singled out for attack in the General Assembly for the very act of exercising our right as a sovereign nation. We will remember it when we are called upon to once again make the world's largest contribution to the United Nations. And we will remember it when so many countries come calling on us, as they so often do, to pay even more and to use our influence for their benefit.
Haley said the U.S. will be taking names of countries that voted against the United States. Vice President Mike Pence arrived on an unannounced pre-Christmas visit to Afghanistan Thursday, becoming the most senior Trump administration official to visit troops fighting a 17-year-old conflict that has largely receded from U.S. public view.
Under President Donald Trump, we're rebuilding the military. We're restoring the arsenal of democracy. And we are once again giving our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guard the resources and training you need to accomplish your mission and come home safe.
Flying secretly through the day and night on a standard unmarked U.S. Air Force C-17, Pence thanked some of the roughly 15,000 U.S. personnel still hoping to turn the tide of America's longest war. And on Wall Street, stocks ended the day gaining 55 points. This is VOA. 19 people have been injured in Australia after the driver of an SUV plowed into pedestrians in Melbourne in an area busy with Christmas shoppers. Australian police believe it was a deliberate act, and they say the driver is an Australian citizen of Afghan descent who was known as has a known history of drug use and mental health issues, but still, they say there is no indication it was connected to terrorism. The driver is in custody. Here's how one witness described what happened to a Melbourne radio station.
I eventually just went up because there was a crowd, and I met a witness. Like I talked to somebody who actually saw what happened, and she was very distraught. It made me feel really sad actually talking to her. So she just told me that a car just drove through people crossing the road. Hit a bunch of people. She described it as people flying through the air like rag dolls.
Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said four of the 19 victims are in critical condition. One of them is a toddler who suffered a serious head injury. A senior UN official says people are dying because the Syrian government will not give the green light for an urgent medical evacuation from eastern Ghouta, a suburb of Damascus. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations has been asking the Syrian government for permission to transport patients from eastern Ghouta to Damascus for urgent medical treatment since May, to no avail. Special advisor to the UN Syrian envoy, Jan Egelen, says 494 people were on the priority list for medical evacuations drawn up 2 months ago.
That number is going down, not because we're evacuating people, but because they are dying.
At least 400,000 people are trapped in eastern Ghouta, which is besieged by President Bashar al-Assad's regime. UN humanitarian workers have been blocked from delivering food and other critical supplies to the civilians trapped there for months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis was visiting the American Navy base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, or he is. He's the first Pentagon chief to visit since 2002. The administration's policy on continued use of the military prison did not come up, but it does come amid uncertainty over the administration's policy. Mattis is visiting simply to offer Christmas greetings to troops and not discuss detainee policies or even tour the facilities. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, December the 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. South Sudan warring factions meeting in Addis Ababa signed a ceasefire agreement in their latest push to end a four-year civil war. The agreement pledges that all parties on Saturday will end hostilities, freeze military positions, and release prisoners of war and abducted women and children.
The milestone achieved during this week could not be possible without the constructive engagement, goodwill, and support of the South Sudanese delegates.
That's IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Wise. And in Tanzania, opposition and civil society groups have condemned a new law which demands that only public officials can release any government-related statistics. And as a large number of Zimbabweans return home for Christmas, they are finding that grocery stores have hiked up the price of basic necessities to increase their profit.
You find that some prices of arola meal, sugar, chilies, fresh milk, and other stuff, it went up with between 1 cent, 2 cents, 3 cents. It's the norm when it's Christmas time. These retailers, they increase prices willy-nilly.
Ntokozo Nyoni is the regional chairman for the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe. And Burkina Faso says it will immediately stop importing goods from North Korea. The West African country was the top importer of North Korean goods in Africa in 2015. Those stories and sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. More than 100 members representing various South Sudan warring factions who have been meeting in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, finally signed a ceasefire agreement. Reporter John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus is covering the forum in Addis Ababa and files this report.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, concluded the High-Level Revitalization Forum with the signing of an agreement on cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians, and humanitarian access in South Sudan on Thursday in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. IGAD's Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Wise, says the agreement shall come into force at 00:01 a.m., South Sudan local time on December 24th.
The milestone achieved during this week could not be possible without the constructive engagement, goodwill, and support of the South Sudanese delegates.
South Sudanese stakeholders, representatives of the government, opposition parties, armed and unarmed groups, civil society groups, eminent persons, business, women, and youth have been meeting at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa since December 18 to revive the collapsed 2015 peace deal. The chairman of the African Union, Moussa Faki Mohamed, cautions South Sudanese leaders to live up to the pledges they have made during the negotiation of the ceasefire agreement. Mohamed says the entire African continent and the East African region is interested in finding an end to the conflict in South Sudan.
The real test of the seriousness of your commitment would reside in the practical actions that you would take to implement the terms of this agreement. Practical actions to stop the fighting, offensives and counter-offensives that have killed so many innocent civilians, bereaved so many families, and caused so much damage.
The head of AU says the signing of the cessation of hostilities comes in the backdrop of delicate insecurity across South Sudan. Ethiopian Foreign Minister Wekne Gebiehu, who is also the chairman of IGAD's Council of Ministers, warned South Sudanese to stop fighting in their country.
I must emphasize that we will continue to follow up and single out spoilers to be named and shamed and take action as necessary to ensure your effort in reaching this decision is not be wasted. We cannot sit idle by while this important process is picking up. Along with you, we are saying enough is enough.
The top Ethiopian diplomat assured South Sudanese that his country will ensure the efforts of the IGAD 7 member countries to bring peace in South Sudan is not undermined by individuals or the warring groups. Augustine Njoroge is the deputy chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body charged with monitoring the 2015 peace deal. Njoroge applauded the various South Sudanese stakeholders for signing a ceasefire accord to create an environment for further negotiations of the failed 2015 peace deal.
This is only the beginning of the high-level revitalization forum, and we expect that the spirit in which this phase of the cessation of hostility has been concluded will continue. We in JMEC look forward to your return for further negotiations.
Leaders of the 8 IGAD countries decided to revive the shattered 2015 peace deal after the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission documented several incidences of violations by both the government of South Sudan and rebels loyal to Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza in Addis Ababa.
Ugandan legislators this week voted to amend the constitution and remove age limit restrictions, allowing the incumbent president Yoweri Kaguta Museveni to contest again. Opposition members of parliament, however, say they will not give up the fight. The leader of the opposition in parliament, Winnie Chiza, says that the opposition will challenge the amendment in courts of law. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
An overwhelming majority of parliamentarians, mainly from the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, voted to remove the age cap from the Ugandan constitution. Speaker of Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, read the results amid its applause from those in support of the bill.
Honourable members, these are the results of the roll call. Abstentions were 2, against were 62, in favour 315. Honourable members, I now declare that the title has been settled and the bill passes.
Article 102B of the Constitution previously required a person seeking to stand for presidency to be between 35 to 75 years of age. Mover of the controversial bill, Rafael Majezi, said he was glad his fellow parliamentarians had accepted to amend the Constitution. He insists the amendment is for the better of the country and the region at large.
The biggest beneficiary are the people of Uganda. That if they still want President Museveni, the gate is open so that they benefit from his experience and commitment and his capacity. So for me, this is not about the president. This is about Ugandans. This is about East Africa. This is about Africa.
The parliament also voted to extend the term of local councils and the parliament from the current 5 to 7 years. Sam Kutesa is a parliamentarian and Minister of Foreign Affairs.
I supported 7 years for parliament, which is what is in the power of parliament to do, and local governments. But for the president to make it 7 years so as to realign the administration, there would need to be a referendum, and there would have to be one.
Kutesa says the extension 7 years is meant to give MPs enough time to fulfill their programs. This means that the next elections will be held in 2013. Mohamed Nsereko is among the MPs who was opposed to amending the constitution.
I'd like to thank everyone in the opposition, the independents, the NRMs that have voted with the Ugandans, that you've not done everything in vain. Ugandans will always support you. But we also ask our countrymen, it's not yet all done. We can still go on for a referendum. We shall carry out a referendum. Please say no. They might have compromised a few. They'll not compromise all of you.
Leader of opposition in parliament, Winnie Chiza, described the passing of the bill as selfishness and moral corruption. She says the opposition will not relent.
The journey we are going to embark on is the journey koji kuteko. What next after you have touched the constitution? What next after you have broken the hearts of Ugandans?
Chiza says the opposition will continue to sensitize the population about dangers of mending the constitution. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
A large number of Zimbabweans are returning home for Christmas, but they're finding that grocery stores have hiked up the price of basic necessities in order to increase their profit margins. These price increases affect those who live in Zimbabwe year-round more than those who are visiting. Reporter Kosnai Mtetwa spoke with Ntokozo Nyoni, the regional chairman for the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe, about these price increases.
First, I think I would like to applaud the government, considering that in the last 3-4 days, the prices of bread had actually gone up. But the Minister of Industry and Commerce intervened quickly, and it went back to 90 cents. So I would like to applaud the government for that. Other than that, you find that some prices of arola meal, sugar, chilies, fresh milk, and other stuff, it went up with between 1 cent, 2 cents, 3 cents. It's the norm when it's Christmas time. These retailers, they increase prices willy-nilly.
Do you think that has something to do with the fact that a lot of people from the diaspora come back for around Christmas time?
It could be that, because they take advantage of the situation. They know that usually Christmas time, consumers, they don't look at the price that much. And another thing, I think, is the plastic money. Most of the consumers, they are not used to this, using the plastic money. They are used to cash. Mm-hmm. So you find that even when they get to a supermarket, they don't look at the prices like they used to do, because like when you're carrying cash, mm-hmm. you'll be conscious with the money that you are carrying. But now when you are using plastic money, when you are swiping, you just fill up the troll, and then you just swipe there, and you don't even see how much it costed.
Are people struggling more so around Christmas time to get the basic necessities they need because of the price hikes?
Yes, it does affect the consumers in a way, because not everyone has those plastic money. There are some people who are from rural areas who do not have that money, so it really affects them.
And has there been any word from the government in regards to trying to cap the price hikes?
Yes, I'm happy, because the president actually slammed these price hikes, especially it was 2 days back chronically, when Mr. Mnangagwa was actually condemning these unscrupulous business people.
There's been reports that certain stores are only accepting U.S. dollars. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, very true. It's actually happening. People are doing what they want. I think the president, the new president, has to work on that, because there are people charging prices in U.S. dollar, mm-hmm. Prices in bond, and prices of swiping. Mm-hmm. You find that the prices of swiping and bond, it's very expensive.
That was Ntokozo Nyoni, the regional chairman for the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe. He was speaking earlier today with VOA's Kuzna Mtetwa. Opposition and civil society groups have condemned a Tanzanian law which demands that only public officials can release any government-related statistics. The law has drawn mixed reactions from different parts of the country, with support coming mainly from partisans of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi CCM party, while civil society and opposition political groups, including the Chadema, are opposed to the edict. Opponents argue that the law undermines freedom of speech as guaranteed under the Constitution. They argue that this is yet another move by the government to stifle any dissent. But supporters say opposition and civil society groups use inaccurate statistics to misinform the public and create tension with the aim of making President John Magufuli unpopular. They called on the government to ensure individuals and groups who abuse official statistics should be made to face the full rigors of the law. Peter Kibatala is an independent lawyer in Tanzania. He tells VOA's Peter Cloti that a cross-section of citizens are displeased with the law, but quickly added that challenging the law in court is the best way to resolve any concerns that they may have over the regulation.
From my little experience, it has been received with dismay, including by legal practitioners like me who engage in law and whose lifetime struggle has always been for freedom of expression and, affordment of different opinions. So I don't think it is a very friendly law. It's not a very friendly law. It's not a friendly law. It has been passed by Parliament, but it remains law until and unless some legal challenges are mounted against it. But in my opinion, it's not a very friendly law to rule of law.
Some people are saying the law itself undermines freedom of speech and expression as guaranteed under the Tanzanian constitution, and that people can bring out facts to challenge whatever statistics that is thrown out. So why this law? Do you think those who are saying that the law undermines the constitution, are they justified?
In my opinion, as a lawyer, the law goes against the tenets of constitution, because one of the most important tenets in the constitution is the freedom of speech. But a law remains intact and valid despite opinions of all legal practitioners until and unless it is challenged successfully in law. So the next step is for everybody who feels aggrieved, including myself, challenging the law in court. But coming back to, you know, logical analysis of the law, I mean, it is a tenet of a statistical parameter, statistical, you know, region that research is challenged by research. If somebody says these statistics are in this way, the best way to respond is to give correct statistics, not to jail somebody, not to prosecute somebody, because then the only conclusion that can be drawn is that you want to muzzle alternative voices.
Some people are saying that the prospect of having it redressed in court is almost negligible because of the dominance of President John Pemba Magufuli. And some people are saying sometimes his rhetoric intimidates the judiciary. What are your thoughts, independent thoughts, on some of these things going on and the prospect of challenging this law in court?
I have gone to court since 2010. I've challenged very many legislations, very many dictations, very many pronouncements. Some of them, in my opinions, are contrary to law. But as a lawyer, and if we want to maintain rule of law, we must always presume that the independence of the judiciary is there. Now, of course, the practical aspect of it is different because each case has to be decided on its own merit. But at the end of the day, like I said before, a law can only be overturned in the courts of law. Now, whether the courts are receptive or not in a particular case, that's another issue. We cannot give up. We have to persevere and always remember that if you want to build a society that believes in the rule of law, we must give credence to the courts of law. If we lose, no problems. There are always appellate stages and other stages, but we cannot give up. Now, I understand that sometimes in a country like ours, when the highest authority in the country gives something that are most directions, it can intimidate or it can be interpreted as giving directives to those who are vested with jurisdiction to interpret the law. But we cannot give up. We must always, like I said before, assume that the courts will be independent as we hope they are. Even if we suffer setbacks, we must move on.
Supporters of the law are saying that some opposition figures and media personnel purposely mislead the public by quoting wrong figures and statistics just to intimidate and sometimes create disaffection and confusion among the population. So it was right for the government that is mandated to protect life and property to ensure that it is curtailed. The practice of misleading the public is curtailed, hence the law. What are your thoughts?
That argument, my brother, has no merit. And I'm being very respectful to such kind of thought. I'm a lawyer, and there's a perception in Tanzania that my views are pro-opposition. Of course, like I told you before, I stand for all those who fight for rule of law. We have people who say people like me lose cases because we fight for the opposition. Courts of laws in Tanzania don't look at the caliber or political inclinations of the country, but people have been permitted to post on Facebook, on Instagram, things like that point out to us, you know, being we lose cases simply because we are allied to the opposition. But no action has been taken. This is pure content of law, because the implication that is created by such force is that the laws of Tanzania, I mean, the courts of Tanzania are politically inclined. Now, to revert back to your to the center of your question, statistics or research is answered by alternative research, not by jailing somebody, not by parading people in court. So it is a very wrong approach for anybody to parade somebody in court simply because they were, offered alternative statistics. Like I said, the law is the law unless it is successfully challenged in court. But the premises that opposition are this and that, it is wrong. It is wrong. And like I said, I choose to be respectful, but I could have used very stronger words.
Peter Kibatala is an independent lawyer in Tanzania. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here's Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the reaction of the Nigerian Football Federation president, Amaju Pinnick, who says he was at a loss with the exclusion of the Super Eagles striker and Chelsea midfielder Victor Moses from the shortlist of the three for the 2017 Africa Footballer of the Year award. Egypt's and Liverpool striker Mohamed Salah, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Borussia Dortmund and Gabon, and Sadio Mane of Senegal and Liverpool all made the final list for the awards scheduled for January in Accra, Ghana. He says he's not happy because he felt that Victor Moses should be part of the three. And from Uganda comes a report that youthful Irish coach John McKinstry is in line to become another former Rwanda head coach to handle Uganda Cranes. Federation of Uganda Football Association Executive Committee, who sat on Thursday, passed and forwarded a list of four coaches to government for final guidance on the next Ugandan Cranes coach. The list thinned down from 90 applicants to include only four lucky candidates, include Desabri Sebastian from France, John McKinstry from Ireland, Emilio Ferreira from Belgium, and Ugandan Moses Basena, who is at the moment the interim coach. The Federation will announce the new coach after discussions with the Ministry of Education and Sports on the matter. And on to women's football. American coach Randy Waldrum has turned down the offer to coach Nigeria's senior women's national team, the Super Falcons. The NFF had named the former Trinidad and Tobago gaffer as the technical advisor for the Super Falcons in October after his application for the job and subsequent recommendation by the NFF Technical Committee, though subject to further negotiations. It is the second time in 18 months an expatriate will reject a coaching offer from the NFF after Frenchman Paul Le Guin declined to handle the Super Eagles in June 2016. Staying with football news, FIFA has banned five El Fasali players for 1 year after assaulting referee Ibrahim Noor El Din in the final of the Arab Championship in August. The incident occurred after Esperance scored a controversial goal through Dahoudi against El Fasli in extra time to give the Tunisian side a 3-2 win and the title. The Jordanian players and staff protested Noor El Din's decision and responded by assaulting him. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Friday, December 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a good day, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clot, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
VOA News is always at the tip of your finger.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.